The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, and your dream is JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Footy Prime Podcast presents Today in Footy History for December the 9th, 1892. English football club Newcastle United is founded. December 9th, 2000. Tottenham Hotspur's defender Ledley King scores the fastest goal in English Premier League history at 9.82 seconds in a 3-3 draw at Bradford City. And former goalkeeper Gregory Forrest decides to beat the record for most bacon consumed in one sitting by making 11 pounds of bacon and consuming it all while leaving two pieces for his old friend Ronaldo. This has been Today in Footy History.
I like the idea of us doing that while JC doing that every show, actually.
I know.
That's really good. Don't you think?
Love it.
Yes.
Love the accent.
Yeah.
Bravo, JC.
Come on. I mean, that couldn't take much time, JC.
It literally took, I thought we started at 8:30, but we started at 8:45. So I'm like, I got 15 minutes.
Well, there you go. I liked it. It was good. And it's informative, too.
It is.
And that old English accent.
OLDE.
It's Footy Prime. It's Footy Prime. It's December the 9th. What show number is this for us?
990.
990.
Jesus.
10 more till we hit a grand.
Until we spontaneously combust.
Are we going to remember when we get to like 1,000 or just realize a week later, oh yeah, we did 1,000 last week?
Yeah, probably that. Well,
probably that, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, Dubs is here and Craig's here. It's JC and Wong is here. I'm Shams. No Jimmy today. We have a guest later today, though. Very shortly, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that Wonger and his former school owe a lot of gratitude to. Right, Wonger?
That's correct. Coming in okay?
Yeah.
And that was a question for Cassie.
I'm in my ex-wife's basement having taken care of my children. And wearing her glasses.
I was going to say, they hurt.
You definitely came through.
Team Edna, you look fantastic.
Yeah.
Those
your glasses go
strange.
Halfway up your forehead.
Yeah.
Oh, they do not fit properly. And she would kill me because I'm stretching them. I have a much wider head than she does.
It reminds me of the Seinfeld episode when Jerry gets glasses.
Yeah.
That's a lot of gum.
So, okay. So you're at your ex-wife's in the basement, not locked down. They're not tied to a chair.
No.
Wearing her glasses.
Very agreeable.
Yeah. He's a hostage.
Yeah.
To those glasses.
My hands are just tied behind my back. I'll tap.
Anyway, as I was saying, we have Samantha Rogers, the VP of Philanthropy for Canada Soccer. And also someone, Wonga, do you want to like talk now about...
No, I thought we'd do it. I thought we'd talk about some other things first, and then when Sam was going to come on.
Because you threw in the dark web before you introduced Samantha, kind of throw to me about Samantha and McGill. Okay.
Well, let me talk. Yes, okay. I'll introduce her. I'll give some background. But Dubs has met her. Okay. Craig has met her. I introduced Dubs and Sam about 3 years ago, I think. Feels like longer though, eh, Dubs, that we've known each other?
Mm-hmm.
But we went out to one of Dubs' vegan haunts in Montreal, and we went and ate vegan before homecoming weekend. But a small background between, we were having a huge disconnect at McGill between our alumni, especially our football alumni, who've all gone, a lot have gone on to do some pretty special things, and alumni in general. And Sam was the director of fundraising or giving or whatever it was called at McGill. And she helped re-engage and reconnect McGill alumni, specifically football alumni, into a scholarship opportunity and now a yearly giving platform. So we went from probably in the 20,000s to now, I think last year we made $350,000 to $400,000 to support McGill football. And I think that that's what's so special about what Sam is bringing to Canada soccer. And to be honest, maybe what they needed ages ago, but didn't understand what they needed. And I think this is, you know, a needs analysis within a corporation, a company, and how to move forward by investing.
This is something quite new, isn't it, Wong? Or really from our perspective, with the national team raising money, like we've always sort of just sort of sat there and waited for the government, which really never came, and certainly not investing in the level that we would hope. So is this the world we're living in now where we need to raise money, I guess?
Well, shit, I think you should ask Sam that.
Yeah. Save that one.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Well, I mean, Kevin Blue, that's when his first interviews, press conferences he held, he mentioned philanthropy being sort of a massive part. That's where he comes from in the States. It's very much a US sports model, isn't it? And as Samantha will tell us, they've raised a lot of money so far on their way to their goals for 2026 and beyond. So it's all very positive. But I'm sure there's many out there who will find the negative in it.
Well, you know what the other thing is? I'd like her to, I was just thinking about, a lot of people don't understand the difference between Canada Soccer and FIFA Toronto, FIFA Vancouver, or FIFA Canada, whatever they're calling themselves, because they're absolutely two different entities. And I think it'd be interesting to get her take on how that, because I didn't recognize it until I was down in Washington last week, the kind of separation of church and state. One is a federation that completely, their model is, you know, basically a government-run model, and the other is a for-profit with FIFA Canada. So it's
why people are confused too, Wonger, is Peter Montopoli, Sandra Gage, people at FIFA Canada are formerly Canada Soccer.
That's right. Like recently, like within the last 2 years. So yeah, they've transitioned off to FIFA Canada. And, you know, I'm not sure if that has ever been brought up, how these different entities work together or don't, which is the other question.
You got some good questions lined up.
You know, I learned a lot down in DC.
a new one has arisen from the ashes of the former one, thanks to his trip to DC.
Well, there's nowhere to go but up, Sharps, when you've hit the bottom.
I didn't realize that Wonger was absorbing all this information when he was down there. You would never know.
He's always soaking it all up in his own way, isn't he?
He's ordering four bottles of wine on the FIFA tab.
You know that
I'll never get re-invited.
The peace trophy? I'm just envisioning Wonger's head as opposed to the globe. All that hands there. Lifting him above and this new Wonga being created for us.
No, yeah. As Gregor said, dragging the head down.
Right. I was thinking about whether or not I should just be myself down in Washington. And I went, I've got to just be who I am. And I think it was great, Craig, when the people we met, how outgoing some of them were once you introduced yourself. It was great. Like from, you know, the president of soccer for New Zealand, we met the president of soccer for Iceland, just waiting around. I introduced myself. I think he played against Craig in the Prem.
That's right.
At Nottingham Forest. So we just had some great conversations, but they wouldn't happen all the time if you just didn't introduce yourself and say, hey, what do you do? And it's incredible because even with all these famous soccer players and famous footy players, there was a little bit of a disconnect in how people were meeting. And language is a big deal, right? If you can speak a couple of different languages, it's pretty easy for you to say hi and hello and all the rest.
But a 6'5 calling card never hurts your case, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially the sweet ass on Forrest.
Yeah, Wonger was definitely himself. And then there was another guy that popped in once in a while, that Steve Chan guy.
Right.
Yeah. So they met both those people.
I will say this. I've known Wonger now for, 6 years? And I've never met anyone that works the room quite as well as him.
It's true.
He doesn't care who you are. He's going to talk to you. Actually, JC is pretty great too, actually. I have to say, he's very good working the room, but often very he's just laced in sarcasm with certain people.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, as mentioned, we have a guest today. Wonga was waxing poetic about Samantha Rogers and what she accomplished at McGill. Samantha, welcome to Footy Prime, VP of
Philanthropy.
Hello. Canada Soccer. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Love your set.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's nice. You've got the angles.
Have to look forward at you, Forrest.
Yeah. See, Craig, you see that? Craig, see that as a set? It's decent, isn't it?
I know. I'll come over to Samantha's place.
No.
Okay, Samantha. So listen, Canada Soccer Foundation, Canada Rising, Canada Red. Basically, all philanthropy as a means to raise funds for Canada Soccer. Are you surprised by the response within Canada so far?
I think it's so exciting, for sure. I don't want to say I'm surprised, but sport philanthropy is still so new in Canada. So I think it's been really incredible to see the uptick, for sure, and how Canadians have come together and supported soccer in the country. So that's been really fun to watch in such a short amount of time, too, which has been incredible.
Yeah, you mentioned that because I look back to the John Herdman time and raising money, and it was like, okay, is this the world we're living in now? We used to sort of sit back and wait for our governments to just sort of help out, and never would, we would think, not in our opinion anyway. And is this something that is going to be continued? And is how important is it for our programs to raise money these days as opposed to the way it used to be with basically nothing?
Right. And I think it's been easy to look at other countries too in what they do. And so if you look at someone similar to us in Australia, they have in the past few years actually started shifting, where the government is starting to look at them and say, if you're not going to generate your own revenue, we can't just keep giving you taxpayer dollars. So you have to be able to prove that you can do it yourself with all revenue streams, not just philanthropy, of course. But what I find really interesting with them is they have a model there with an Australian Sports Foundation, and they're on track to raise about $100 million just this year.
Wow.
Which is incredible. For a second.
There we go. Yeah, no, that's enormous. I mean, that's a game changer. And obviously we're not quite there yet, but the goals that you've set for 2026 and beyond, would you say you're well on the way to reaching those goals?
Yes. So our goal is to raise $25 million. Canada Rising is our philanthropic campaign to raise $25 million by the end of 2027. And we have just hit the $15 million mark, which is really, really very exciting. And it's almost overwhelming to see the support that we've had.
You are VP of philanthropy at Canada Soccer. Did that exist before Kevin Blue came in, and how did you get about moving into this position? And just FYI, before you came on, I told everyone out there in podcast land about how well you did at McGill. So some of those parallels from McGill now over to Canada Soccer, can you describe some of them and how you're getting over the challenges?
For sure. So I think and thank you, Wonger, for saying that. But when I was at McGill, that was really new, right? And so even a lot of the athletic departments at our Canadian universities weren't even really looking to raise funds. It wasn't something that was maybe as prestigious as other departments like medicine or business and things like that. So, but when you look at the passion and the support that lives within athletics, it's really easy to bring people together. And so a lot of it was really about establishing a base where we know people are passionate about whichever sport. This is at McGill, of course. So we know people are passionate about a sport. We know people are passionate about their time there, their teammates, their community, all of the experiences that they got out of sports. So how do we harness that? And whether it's people giving back $50 or giving back their time, because we know sport is really built on the backs of volunteers, but no matter what way we look at it, there's always a different way to give back. So really, it was just about harnessing that all and bringing it together. And so when I left McGill, I ended up working with a number of different federations, trying to build a similar platform where it's like, hey, you have this incredible community and people are really passionate about it. So how do we turn that into like a really single impact area that we can actually build some sustainability into the sport? And so now seeing that at soccer, it's been really quite fun to try to establish that. I always look to our neighbors to the south, US Soccer, and the way that they've built out their foundation, and they have someone in a similar role as mine. And we talk a lot because it's a very unique role to be in the football space, obviously, especially at a time like right now. But it's been a really fun challenge, and I really enjoy working with people in this space and the community. And I always say I have the privilege of meeting all these incredible people who are just looking to make an impact, and my job is to help them make that impact in whichever way they see fit.
Sam, I got to see you in Montreal when our men's national team was playing Australia at Stade Saputo, and you just talked about our neighbors to the south in the US, and they've always done this in a really innovative way, and we seem to be late to the party in that regard. But you visited the US, and like, how do you tap into that experiential aspect of it where you give people the kind of lived experience right up close to the pitch, on the pitch with the armbands and all that sort of stuff, with the wristbands, the accessibility to the players? Like, that's the Canada Red experience that I think we're just new to. So how right. do you grow that? And like, what was that experience like kind of tailing your US counterparts and like what they've leveraged so far in the way that they're fundraising?
Right. So it's funny you say that. Even when I was at McGill, it's really when I started to get a peek behind the curtain at just college athletics in the US and what they do in terms of bringing people behind the ropes and giving them the experience you just mentioned. And so it was a natural fit, of course, with Canada Soccer, was calling US Soccer and saying, hey, do you mind if we come down and shadow you? And they are completely open to it. So they say, you know, steal any ideas that we have. Let's share. Let's learn from each other. We're not, you know, we're competitors on the pitch, but we're not competitors in the work that we're trying to do here. So we went down to Columbus just to really see exactly how they put that on and be able to learn from them in different ways of how do we bring people in. It's really important for us to also show everyone that's behind the team. So not just the players and the coaches, but who is all of the staff that's making things go round, and how do we, you know, let people have some insight into Spencer, our equipment guy, and what he does and his passion and making sure that everyone is prepared, right? And in communications, and what are all the different sort of background things that we sort of take advantage of on a day-by-day basis, but we know that a lot of people are really interested in joining that journey with us and being there and having that exposure. And I think what's really important with what we're trying to do is create access, opportunity, and excellence. So how do we bring everyone along with us for that opportunity as well?
Now, the alumni, Samantha, is something that's been sort of talked about behind the scenes, putting that together for Canada Soccer. What role do you see that playing, and how can they better the situation for you and make things easier, and how can they affect things in a more positive way moving forward?
Right. Well, using Wonger as an example, he's one of my favorite alumni from McGill. But it's
you're off to a poor start. That's a terrible example.
It's that bad, huh?
Wonger was there from day one, and we had a lot of work to do. So mm-hmm. I think, to your point, Craig, there's so much opportunity and our alumni, I think, are the stewards of the game. You hold the history. And so how do we bring that along, and how do we bring that back in and collaborate more? I think what's been really nice to see is having alumni involved in a number of different things, whether it's looking at hiring new coaches, some of the work that we've been trying to do on the ground, making sure that our current players know all of our alumni. So just when the men's team were in Toronto, you know, Jesse had an open training session for all the alumni to come back. So I think whatever opportunity it looks like, sport, welcomes alumni in so many different ways. So being able to be on the sidelines, supporting us, giving back, working collaboratively, and just trying to build those relationships as we go is what's really important.
The Canada Red program, which is essentially the fans' opportunity to kind of give back, Has that had a great response, a good response? Do you expect an uptick once the new year turns into that World Cup year?
I think it's been, we've just crossed the 2 million mark last week, which was really, really incredible to see. As we move forward, what I really hope is that people don't see this just as a World Cup opportunity, that it's really something that is long-term and it's meant to impact the sport and it's meant to grow the sport. And so for us, our responsibility is to ensure that people understand the impact that it's having. I think people, you know, no matter what level they choose that works for them, I think there's also a sense of pride in knowing that the funds are going back to one of our three impact pillars. And so it's really important for us to be able to show them what that means and what that impact has had. And I think so long as we keep showing that impact and bringing them along for the ride and welcoming them into everything, I think there is something there to set about wanting to be a part of that sustainable model moving forward. And hopefully it continues to grow as we go and as we go into the Women's World Cup in 27 as well. And so that's just something, it's been a really a great opportunity to have this runway for us to jump into this and want to keep that moving forward.
So using the World Cup next year as the big leverage for this moving forward. But the minute that final is played on July 19th, do you just switch your gears to the Women's World Cup in 2027? That's the new lever you're going to use?
Yes, but it's also, you know, Canada Red is meant to mimic almost like an annual fund. And so ideally, it's this annual membership that you continue to contribute. And so even in non-World Cup years, hopefully that there's still enough interest and that we deliver enough value and you see enough impact that even on those non-World Cup years that you would still be involved with the program.
Sorry. Sam. What is the difference? And I just want to get things clear. What's the difference between Canada Rising and Canada Red and whatever Canada? No, but Canada Red and Canada Rising, yes. What are they?
So Canada Rising is really just our rallying cry. It's our foundation brand spot around this philanthropic campaign. And so typically in the philanthropic space, you'll launch a campaign and a campaign has a theme and a title. And so Canada Rising is our $25 million philanthropic campaign. And that's brought in, you know, support through the foundation, support through Canada Red. So it encompasses everything that we're trying to do from a philanthropic standpoint.
Okay.
I was going to ask how you convince Canadians, where I think sport usually takes a back seat to a lot of things. And Craiger mentioned like the fact that the government doesn't really back sport as much. And so now we're turning to kind of private citizens and trying to lean on Canadians to back it in that sense. So how do you convince like rich citizens, but also everyday Canadians, that sport is a cause worthy of support?
My favorite cause. So it's a tough sell because I just don't think, in my experience, people have always thought and assumed, oh, well, athletes are rich. So, you know, you're overflowing with money. Nobody needs money. The system is perfect. And they don't necessarily look at the different opportunities that exist. And so it was always strange to me that you can support your local museum, your local church, you know, whatever, your local community program, but you can't support a local soccer club. It doesn't make sense in that same way. But I think a lot of it comes down to the education. And our first big hurdle was actually educating people that you can contribute to sport. You can contribute to Canada Soccer and actually get a tax receipt. It is a philanthropic contribution. That was the first big hurdle of ours. But then once we got there, then it was actually understanding the impact. So then where does all of that money go and how do we actually grow it? What I said earlier, you know, is that I have the privilege of sort of seeing behind the scenes these different individuals that come along, whether it's a $2 million donation because they're just really passionate about fixing something in the sport, or it's a $50 donation because that actually does matter. And people don't think that matters, but $50 buys a ball. Like we actually can move the needle with a small contribution. And so I would never want anyone to think that, you know, it's just sort of a needle in a haystack and it doesn't actually move the dial, but it really does. And I think collaboratively to see Canadians come together and wanting to move that forward has been really inspirational. But a lot of it is just talking. I think we've had donors who have come forward, even just from the behind the scenes tour, and they're sort of putting things together and understanding, oh, okay, all of this goes into making us a successful program. So where can I contribute? Or, you know, they'll pick something up that Jesse said where, well, how come the guys couldn't have a camp because they don't have the money? So how much does a camp cost? Like, how do we actually move that along, and where can I contribute? So there is that level of sophistication too from donors that just pick up on things that becomes of interest of them, and then just saying, okay, how do I solve that for you?
Obviously, with the ticket pricing controversy, a lot of people don't quite understand that that is out of Canada Soccer's hands. They don't really have much say in that at all. But has it been pushback to you when you promote Canada Red, for example, and the opportunity to get tickets through that program, and then the pricing, therefore?
Right. We certainly have a lot of inbound on tickets. And I think, you know, some people were not fully understanding the process of how it works. And so, of course, you can join Canada Red for free, and there will be tickets available in that tier. But then, of course, it changes the game, right? Once you make it through, and then you see what the ticket prices are, which has we have nothing to do with and we have no control over. And I think it will price certain people out. I think for us, what we're trying to do is ensure that there's enough opportunities around the World Cup that people still feel like they're included. And so whether it's watch parties, community initiatives, support through our Club Plus program, like whatever we can do from a federation to be able to provide as much opportunity and for our clubs and our community to take advantage of the World Cup where we can. Hmm.
Does the Toronto organizing committee and Vancouver do they work independently from each other, or do they work together?
I think it seems that they work independently and then with FIFA Canada. And so I think between the three of them, and then of course with us brought in, and I think that also lends a bit of confusion because not everybody can decipher the difference between FIFA Canada, FIFA Vancouver, FIFA Toronto, and Canada Soccer, which fair enough, there's a lot of us. But I think we all have a different role to play. And so for us, it's also, you know, our responsibility to work collaboratively with them to make something really impactful and have a legacy in Canada.
So there's actually four different entities: FIFA Canada, FIFA Toronto Organizing Committee, FIFA Vancouver Organizing Committee, and obviously Canada Soccer.
Yes.
Fuck, that's a lot. Well, I want people to understand, if I'm figuring this out right now, there are people across this country who want to get involved. They don't know who to blame when something goes wrong. They don't know who to say what a great critique that is when something goes right. And I think that's an important part of moving forward is accountability. And, you know, knowing what you're accountable for. And yesterday, Sam, you were on CTV's morning show.
I was.
And how is your media appearance? Because I would say this is a big step from CTV to go into Footy Prime. Who do you like better? Yes.
I'm a background person. So this is, you know, I have been pushed to the front for some of this, but this I certainly, you know, feel more comfortable and at ease with you guys than rather than being on live television at 7 a.m.
I think on your story on Instagram, you said I doing things that challenge me, doing things that I'm scared shitless to do. And yes. Like you did it and you did great. It was a great appearance.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. But yes, I'm a background person. Being out there having to talk about things is not my forte, but I do think it's really, for me, the passion is about sharing sport philanthropy. And so any opportunity to be able to have that conversation is really important. But Wonger, to your point, yes, it is very confusing, I think. And look at what the U.S. is dealing with as well. Like they, with all of their host cities, plus they have U.S. soccer, plus they have the Soccer Forward Foundation, plus they have a U.S. soccer foundation. So there's a number of different groups. But I think at the end of the day, we're the ones that are going to be around for the long term. And we're the ones that are going to be delivering impact as best as we can. But yes, I would agree. There are a number of different entities for sure.
I think if you want to blame anyone for anything, FIFA is always a good target. Right? You know, generally speaking, they don't care either, right? You know, they're just like Teflon, just say what you want. I'm curious though, Samantha, given your experience in philanthropy, say you had a podcast, right? That was desperate for sponsors and you're sick and tired of doing it four times a week for free. Would philanthropy be let me be an angle that maybe you'd look into.
You could always
family.
You know, you could. Well, Longer and I have talked about this a lot, so I think you could. Why not?
How do we start?
You got any spare time?
Could Footy Prime be your fourth pillar?
Exactly. We are available to.
Oh, there's an idea. There's an idea. I think there's something to be said there.
I think so. Well, listen, it's, as you said, been a great success so far, and let's hope it continues through this World Cup. I think things are changing in this country.
I think things are changing. And I appreciate your support. You all have been very supportive of what we're trying to do. So that's been really incredible.
Well, we look forward to getting the tickets in the mail. Because as mentioned, we can't afford to buy them. Anyway,
who can?
Canada Red you can sign up for.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, as mentioned, Wonga as one of the largest contributors to McGill's.
Oh, no, not the largest contributor.
Oh, no.
Time and mouth time. Yeah.
Okay. Time. Maybe get some money for Wonga so we can buy some new glasses. Anyway, Samantha, thanks so much for this.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you're like a seasoned pro. You're great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, really Sam. Good. Thanks, Samantha. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. We'll see you guys soon. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
That was interesting. Samantha Rogers, VP of Canada Soccer's Philanthropy Division, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, Kevin, we had Kevin Blue on the show when he first arrived. And one of the first things he said to us was, you know, we've got to raise money for this organization. And this is a way we're going to do it. And he's come through with his word so far, and hopefully it continues. I mean, there seems to be an appetite, I think, in this country. It seems they've raised $2 million through Canada Red, more than that through the whole foundation. I wonder. I mean, didn't get a chance to ask, but Corporate Canada clearly is beginning to take notice. It seems, and when Australia, a country so similar to us in so many ways, is raising what was 100 million, she said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, potential's there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I think in my opinion, the Australian public are more aligned, I think, than into sports than Canada, in my opinion.
Yeah. And while we were having a bottle of wine, Mark Schwartzer, Craig Paloma, and I, and John Catliff, we were talking about
Paloma. That's who's
Paloma is Mark's wife.
That's right. Sorry. No one knows that. So,
yeah. So,
how but long will the name dropping continue?
It'll continue. But
it's the only one he knew.
It's out of control.
Yeah. Dunga, Kafu. He doesn't know who the fuck they are.
I just high-fived everybody as I got on the bus.
Hello,
he
rude.
Did. He did.
Yes, rude. What's he talking? I think he's talking rude. To you.
But we did talk about Mark sits on a committee that moves things forward, and they get to kind of what they're setting up with alumni in Canada. And so when Sam talks about, modeling after certain successful countries, the move in Australia from when they hosted the 2000 Olympics has had some, they invested at that point, but it's had a lot of roots and wings. And it's something that if we put in place now in Canada, whether at a university level or a federation level for sports, we get to see how it affects our country in a positive way, instead of just sitting around thinking, hey, why are they not funding us? Well, you have to self-fund sometimes. And from there, you get investment based off of your, hopefully, Footy Prime legacy.
What is our legacy?
Well, we don't know yet. We're figuring it out. but it was very nice. Sharms, I put up on LinkedIn that it was 6 years that we've been doing this, and we had such great response on our LinkedIn with people saying congratulations across the board. Martin from former media pro exec was like, thank you for being one of the bright spots in Canada. And, you know, those are the little comments. We get a lot of comments from get back to the kitchen to what the fuck is Wonger doing there on the screen. We get a lot of comments, and some are great and some are inspiring and some are negative. And those are the ones that Craig and I just go, that's a bot. We don't take any
criticism. Oh, well, on that note, I mean, have you, if you want a good laugh, listener, go to our YouTube video regarding the Whitecaps Inter Miami match from the weekend. Those comments are amazing. There's 84 comments. There are some really stupid people out there. Like, honestly, and that's not just because of being negative. I can handle negativity. Like, genuinely stupid people who don't understand sarcasm, can barely write. Mm-hmm. Like, really crawl under the rock they came from, hopefully, and never come out again. Because, but it's really funny, though. I was laughing my head off reading some of this stuff from yesterday.
Yeah.
They think we're all Vancouver Whitecaps fans, eh?
Like, I massive. Know.
We're Whitecaps people.
Yeah.
And who are these people thinking they know soccer? Well, they got 200 caps of international footballers on the podcast.
Yeah.
know a thing or two.
You got to let that just go right. You got to let that wash right over you. See, being a goalkeeper in England for 18 years, the shit that I took in that net scatter there, the abuse. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, honestly, it doesn't bother
me. At least though, you could put a face to it, though. That's the issue with, like, these keyboard warriors, right? Is that people hiding behind, like, this 26 letter and number and symbol name, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Ivan, 64793.
We have some regular commenters who are just so stupid. and I'll call them out at some point. We'll get some comments and we'll call them out, their names. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Happy to criticize us. They're like, whether they ever had education, I don't know. Whether it's too much drugs, alcohol, you know, ruin their brain. I don't know what it is, but they just don't make any sense. Hey, Craig, when you made the switch from playing to the media, it was straight away, right? You stopped playing, you started media pretty much. Did you, I'm assuming you had some negative comments through the media. Did that affect you more than when you played at first or not? Were you able to just brush it off?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, I started the broadcasting before I retired at 98 World Cup was the first time and with TSN and then 2000 Euro and then 2002 World Cup in Japan and Korea and then retired. So I had a bit of a taste for it and wanted to know whether I liked it, whether I was okay at it and how it'd be received. So that helped. And certainly the transitioning from playing to into broadcasting was important, I think, from a point of mental health, just because it's something you've done your whole life and still having that umbilical cord, you know, connected to the game was important. Sort of felt it more when I finally left Sportsnet, that now all of a sudden the umbilical cord is cut and needed to somehow reattach it. And that's when Footy Prime came along. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it actually bothered me more when I was broadcasting criticism than it did when I was playing, because it's just a different thing altogether. So you can't please everybody. You just can't. You can't please everybody. Everybody's pretty tribal when it came to it. I mean, when it comes to league football, if you criticize or talk about, you know, that wasn't a penalty and it was Man United, oh, you hate Man United, you know.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And if you turn it the other way around, they would support that. Like, it's depending on, you know, their how they align with their clubs. Very strange.
There's more gray area. Nuance is lost completely sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. But also, Sharms, remember in 1998, to send someone a critique, whether positive or negative, you had to send in a letter. It cost you money.
Such a good point.
Yeah. Letters cut out of magazines.
Yes, and internet. Like the internets, you had to have one of those dial-up modems in 98. Mm-hmm.
Email was quite new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember starting off at Headline Sports, which became The Score? And it was a big deal because we just launched our website. It's like, ooh, wow, a website. But yeah, they couldn't get to you like they can now. It's very different, isn't it?
No, I mean, the website in 2000, April of 2000, I had my first job in sports, and it was writing and editing Sportsnet.ca, so Sportsnet's website. And I was the fifth person hired, and there was so much opportunity just because – and we still didn't know what we were doing. We put up our stories, gave some opinions, but there was no interaction until like a year later that we said, hey, we can accept some comments. And even then, those comments were, some were douchey, some were great, great opinions. And that's what we get. We get a mix. And if we can say, hey, we've made it, this is where I'm starting to think, hey, maybe we've made it, when we start getting a lot of negative ones too, because we're opening ourselves up to a whole new audience of trolls. So
I remember Wonger too, going back then, that the bosses, some of them were, is this the future? Like, do we need a website?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I was fighting for it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think we're still fighting, you know, TV, digital, separate content should all be the same. It's one content's content. Still fighting that battle on many fronts, I think. I'm just happy that.
Sorry, just get everyone to like press the enlarge button on YouTube. Just like Craig and the Bala door that Trump got. Just like it enlarges, pulls them. We've got a lot. All they have to do is put us on TV. Watch us on TV.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
On YouTube app.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't watch us on YouTube, I mean, we don't put the full show on YouTube just yet, but we put segments on there, chunks, consumable chunks. I'm just happy that we're
rich, meaty chunks.
We're the placenta that keeps Craig going.
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
Well, it's funny. Craig and I had a meaningful conversation in Washington, and
with
we
who? Paloma? About Paloma there?
Oh. Yeah. Paloma was not Paloma, but it was it was just more about how one of our goals when we started Footy Prime was to keep attached to the zeitgeist of football and stay within it, and I think we've accomplished that. And a lot of the good things and some of the bad things that have come our way have been because of this show. And I don't think we would have been where we are right now without like five of us, Jimmy not here, but six of us kind of arm in arm going forward, creating our own kind of media space to talk footy. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be where we are without it.
Mm-hmm. And when people criticize use, for example, Wonger or whoever it's going to be, it's because they don't understand what we are. Right, it's true though, right? They haven't listened to us or watched us for years. It's not all about they expect a typical sports podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And we've never been that. Thank Christ,
mm-hmm.
And we won't be that, right?
And sometimes a criticism is fair. It should be said.
Absolutely fair.
Yeah,
but I think that we're not out for a hot take, and we're not deliberately trying to send everybody or put everybody into a lather and incite the masses. Right. Mm-hmm. And then oftentimes if we do face criticism, it can be fair. People just disagree with us. And that's great, because I think what we do is that we engage people, right? For the good and for the bad. And then I will stand by my opinion, as I'm sure you guys all will. But then where it really sticks in my craw is if we're reading out a comment and then we're being targeted for reading out a comment. They're like, how dare you? And like, those weren't my words. Yeah. You know, that's
6 DPs.
I know.
Quote unquote.
Yes. Actually, I should say that that gentleman that commented 6 DPs and I wrote back all caps, I was kidding. He wrote back in all caps, so was I. So I.
Oh, the double sarcasm.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Right. So Dubs missed out on the sarcasm that we want people to understand. Dubs missed out on it.
I did. I mean, an eye roll emoji could have been helpful there. I wanted to circle back. I've probably missed the boat on this, but on Sam being on here and being transparent and informing everybody what Canada Red is and Canada Rising and all these different pillars and where your money is going, whether you're a fan and you want more engagement, you want more experience as part of that Canada Red or access to tickets, or you're somebody who wants to help kind of support and prop up these programs, whether the youth national teams or the full national teams. I think talking about it and putting it more in the zeitgeist of sports in Canada, just making sure people are informed, is really important, because I think mm-hmm. there's still a lot of distrust where Canada soccer is concerned. I think Kevin mm-hmm. Blue has changed it. I think Jesse Marsh has changed it, being very public, very kind of plain in how he speaks, and being very charismatic and magnetic, drawing people in and like curious about what all of this is. But mm-hmm. there's still a little bit, I think, at its core where it's tied up in the past. And so like the more that Sam comes on and talks about it, the more that we talk about it, I think we can help this grow. and that citizens are tuned into the fact that they can help promote sport by contributing to it, right? But I do think that the government, going back to the comment about, or the, I think Forrest, you were talking about Australia, and so was Sam, and Sam's point about how the government will only invest if the sport itself as an entity is going to the private sector and drumming up investment that way. Like, I think Canada still does need the support from the government. So Mark Carney, great. I'm glad that you're there and you're at the draw, and Canada is excited about being a co-host, even though we're riding into the coattails and maybe we see ourselves as maybe cast offs a little bit in terms of what we're getting as a co-host. But I just think that we need to invest more in sport, and that budget was passed and there wasn't an increase in the amount that was going to sport. So we're going to miss the boat here if we're not careful. But if we can lean on the private sector a little bit more heavily, like Greg Kerfoot was somebody who kept the women's program going for years and years and years before this philanthropic kind of arm of Canada Soccer was even born. Right. So it's possible to do that. And it's thanks to people like that who felt like the responsibility was on their shoulders to continue it, to really inject that investment when it was so desperately needed. So I think there are more people like that out there that you have to see sport as a priority. And the government also has to as well.
Well, you mentioned the use of the alumni. That is so key to me in this, getting that organized. And getting those voices and faces and personalities out there talking about this stuff, right? Some of that money, you know, they've got the three pillars. I hope some of the money can go towards, because I mean, you guys shouldn't do it for free. You guys got to, you know, pay your own bills and you know, create your own careers. But other countries, the alumni is a massive part of those national federations, associations. You see them everywhere. Stick them out everywhere. Hey, offer them, hey, here's Craig Forrest, here's Jimmy Brennan, here's Amy Walsh. Here's doing there is whoever it's going to be, just get them out there talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's a big, big step forward if they can accomplish that.
And one of the things that McGill, going back to Sam's approach, was she got the school to match, going back to what Amy's talking about, any dollar you put in, the reason we were able to raise that much was because McGill was matching. And that showed that McGill, we were allowed to concentrate and direct you're giving to a certain part of the university, but they would agree with you and say, hey, yes, we will match that amount. So it really showed that, hey, between the government / the entity and the people who are coming up to support it, there was a real partnership and collab, which really makes a lot of sense. And going back to the FIFA people, you know, bringing in Craig and bringing in Amy and bringing in Jimmy, D-Row across the board. It's quite interesting because when we were flying home, Craig and we were discussing how
Paloma
FIFA brings these people in and treats them really well. It's a lot of money, but at the same time, everyone has lives. These guys are, you know, they're taking their time to fly to represent FIFA as a goodwill ambassador. And that's what Craig did this weekend. And he brought along Dan Wong as the badwill ambassador.
Hey, Craig, you didn't need to answer this, but did they pay you? Or is it as a goodwill ambassador, they'll just cover your expenses and that's good enough?
Yeah, no, I wasn't paid, no.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So all the FIFA legends, because people were asking, all those legends out there were not paid. I'm sure if you were part of the show...
You are flown business class or first class, depending.
Yeah, they take care of you, clearly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're taken care of. But it is opportunity cost, right? You are giving up 4 days of your life to go and represent FIFA in the best way you want your country to be represented.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they have basically a group of people. Well, not let's say a group. There's basically three people that looked after 75, I think, FIFA players that came into DC and plus one. So there were about 150, 160 people they had to organize. And it's not easy. I mean, like, give you a good example was when Donald decided that he was going to stay at the Kennedy Center and chat to Carney and whatnot, and we were in lockdown, you know, basically there was a number of people, including the president of New Zealand Federation, that had a flight out They couldn't get out of the facility, and they had flights at 6 o'clock. Well, it was already 4:30. They were going to miss their flights. So FIFA was running around organizing, having to get another night at the hotel, reorganizing flights for the next day, all these different things. And those guys did an amazing job. Amazing job. So there's different, you know, levels of FIFA, and we don't know, a lot of criticism. We criticize them as well, and they deserve it. But there's also a lot of good people in there too that do a lot of great work and were amazing with us.
Did they jam your cell phones at all when you're in there when Trump came?
They were throttled.
I don't know if it was jammed, but there was so much data, I think, coming out of that building that's why we couldn't really do stuff on the fly when we were in there.
So when I was in Moscow when they announced who was going to host the World Cup for the FIFA conference, 2017, when Putin was going to made an appearance, right? And they were saying that expect your cell phones to be jammed for a few minutes when he comes in, when he leaves. It's quite common. I don't know if they did that in the end, but it's kind of like, wow, the power.
wanted in D.C. That's, I can tell you that, if they wanted to jam and listen to everything that's going on in that building, I'm sure they could.
Oh, probably. I was actually, I don't know about you guys, I was kind of careful what I was writing to you guys, especially on social media, about Trump during the actual event. Because you never know, right?
You never know. You never know. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Mm-hmm. At the very least.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, that's Footy Prime. Thanks to Samantha Rogers. Sam, we can call her Sam. Do you call her Sam, Wonger?
I call her Sam.
You do, yeah? Yeah, I met her once before, very briefly. So I'm not at the Sam level just yet, but maybe I am now.
You're the nickname guy, though. How are you not?
You're not going to know someone first.
I guess.
I still have difficulty calling Craig Stacks. You know?
Yeah, that's true. You don't, yeah.
I don't, no. It's weird. Maybe I'll try it. Step out of my comfort zone with Craig, now that I'm part of the placenta.
I think, though, like, where Canada need to catch up, whether it's this philanthropy and she's looking to our neighbors to the south, like what the U.S. do really well is they use their alumni as assets, and they leverage that. They leverage the star power, they leverage the history, and they get these people sort of forward facing. And that's what Canada have to do better, not just in soccer, but across the board in sport.
Yeah. And a lot of them have gone on to, you know, do things privately themselves and business and connections to different people and different businesses. So they can do a lot of work as far as putting Samantha in front of the right people.
You know, I know in UK, the after dinner circuit for ex-athletes is huge business. You can make really great living just on the after dinner speaking tour. Is that the case in Canada? I mean, forget soccer for a second here, but like, do ex-hockey players, is there a post-playing career in the after-dinner circuit?
I think it's a little different here, isn't it? They do talks and speeches at, you know, different functions, more in line with corporations, I would think, than they do, you know, dinner events.
Mm-hmm. And depending what part of the country you're in, it might be an after-supper circuit.
Yeah. And in England, give them an excuse to go have a drink somewhere after dinner. Hey, I'm in. I can go have 20 pints. Awesome.
That's right. All right. Well, listen, that was Footy Prime. We're back tomorrow or Thursday. We're going to get Asa back on, right? I put it out there. Mm-hmm. Who wants Asa back on? And the response was very, very supportive of getting him back on for one last little recap on the season that was for the Whitecaps. And then perhaps you can start looking forward to next season. Talk some TFC, talk some Montreal as well. Look, I see a finger being raised by Wonger. He's got a point to make.
Sorry, Dubs has the year-end broadcast tomorrow, no?
Correct.
Is it a year-in-review podcast?
Sure, it can be billed as such.
Oh, you haven't even planned an end down just yet.
No, I have. It's going to be less NSL 6-7. It's going to be less NSL-focused and more women's national team-focused.
Okay. Are you going to be as damning as you were last time and upset lots of people?
I think maybe come off the ledge a wee bit, but I think we haven't really heard from Shireen, nor Signa, nor Claire on our women's national team. So get their insight.
All right. And that's tomorrow?
Yep.
So we got tomorrow off then?
Yeah. Yeah. We're recording early afternoon. So look for that later on in the afternoon as a drop.
Okay. So let's try and schedule Asa for Thursday. And then we are meeting up for some Footy Prime Christmas drinks on Thursday afternoon, aren't we? Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll send some social media as we split the G.
Oh, no, no. There can't be any splitting of the G.
No?
Well, last year, last time, split 81 Gs, or at least attempted to. And I feel like this year, we might be able to hit 82.
No. No, I remember last year, I was a wreck for a few days. I can't do that anymore.
Also, if anyone's interested in coming and hanging with us for our end of year little party, just shoot us a little DM on the old social media, and we'll get you. We'll tell you where we're at.
Come see Sherms yell at everybody.
Yeah,
I remember this coming, asshole.
No, you're a lovely fellow.
All right, thanks, Dubs. All right, until next time. Thanks for listening, everyone, and yeah, we'll chat soon. Bye.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter if we ever make one.
Thanks, Sam.
Like, subscribe, and follow.
Having fun.
Yeah.
Mm. I also have to make clear, Craig and I did not drink any Guinness last year. It was you four who were pounding.
I had two.
You did not.
Wow.
I did. I was drinking three speeds.
Well, yeah. We got through 82 of them? 81 of them?
Well, there's people that came and went. So
there were some people that came and went. Still.
So that's a Jimmy, Charms, and Dubs punched like through 65 beers?
That doesn't make sense. the math doesn't add up.
It doesn't. Because I know my limit. And I can't drink 20 Guinness.
Well, it's like that Wade Boggs on the plane. Like, did he really drink 126 beers?
That's right.
It's all open.
Woody Lore.
End.